This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along with SportsMap Radio. All right, so Brian Barrett is going to join us coming up next hour. One of our good friends from the network, now up in Boston at WEEI. Going to talk Red Sox because I didn't believe in them. I don't know how many of you did. I'm sure there were. I know, Michael, you believed in them. But I didn't. I just thought, you know what, you beat the Yankees, good for you, but the Rays are better. They're going to win that series. And the Red Sox took them down in four games, and now they're going to go up against the Astros. I know. What is the over-under on the amount of Alex Cora / Astros cheating scandal angles are they going to do with this? 10? 11? 12? We'll see. But nevertheless, these two teams are in the ALCS. And it's interesting because when you look at – I like to do this with sports, right, where I get to the final four, if you will, and I think to myself, okay, what would it be like – when this team goes to the World Series or the finals or the Super Bowl or whatever it is, and what would it be like with this team? And already, when you think about the Boston Red Sox, if they were to get to the World Series in a year where people didn't predict them to even go to the playoffs, it's like a bonus to the legacy they're already building since 2004 by winning these World Series that they keep winning a lot. And if the Astros go, well, you know, the Astros are a team that has just constantly been in our October eyes for the last 5 years or so. Right? Remember the George Springer cover in Sports Illustrated where they predicted that the Astros would be World Series champions in 2017, and then they were, and they've gone and you know, played and lost to Washington, and you know, so I think about these things a lot because it seems like when you talk about teams like the Red Sox or the Astros, these are kind of the teams that are been dominating lately in the American League. And the Rays were in that mix as well. But I look over at the National League, and I think that the winner of that game Thursday night in that game five, that's the team either Boston or the Astros are going to be facing in the World Series. All right, coming up, we'll get into some college football. As we've now reached the midweek, and we've calmed down a little bit from some of the hysteria that went on Saturday. And we'll talk about it and break it down next on SportsMap Radio.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
We continue with Wake Up Call. Brian Barrett, WEEI, is going to join us. Oh, in about half an hour, we'll talk to him about the Red Sox. Some of the good things about Boston. Some of the concerns heading into this series with the Houston Astros. We're at the halfway point of the week, and so this means that people have slowed down a little bit on their, angst about college football. Maybe you're overly excited, or maybe you've been disappointed. Oh, by the way, I hate to bring this up, but I feel like I bring this up every year, Ron. There was yet another SEC fan murder based on an outcome of a football game. Apparently, two guys got in an argument over Alabama-Texas A&M that left one person dead. This happens every year. Every year, two drunk guys get in an argument about college football and somebody whips out a rifle. Happens way too often. I hate it. I heard one story years ago that it was two people. I think this was in South Carolina. It was a while ago. They both liked South Carolina and ended up in an argument that led to one of them being killed. Like, they were both fans of the same team. It's not like they were watching like, I like Kentucky, and we'll watch the Kentucky-South Carolina game, and we'll get in an argument. They both liked the same team and got in an argument where one person was drunk and fired a gun and ended up in the death of it. It's so sad, but it happens way too often. All right, Alabama is ranked fifth in the nation, and they're going to go to play Mississippi State coming up this week. And as we talked about earlier, look, Alabama wins out, plays in the SEC title game, beats Georgia. If indeed Georgia's there, and they likely will be, then they'll go to the playoff. And that means Georgia, if they run the table and they only lose to Alabama, they also are going to the playoff. Now, the big concern is this. The AP poll and the coaches poll mean zero, absolutely nothing. They're just guidelines, and they're guidelines for us to just kind of get a feel for where the season is going. And look, you can argue for or against these things because they're so objective and whatnot, but the reality is most of us need some framework of the college football landscape. You know, even if you live in a college football heavy area of the country, like the Southeast or in Columbus or, you know, Happy Valley or Michigan or out West or wherever, where college football may be big, it's hard to cover everybody. It's hard to follow everybody. You know, you think the NFL gives you, they give you 32 teams. Good. Here's 32 teams to pay attention to. There's over 100 Division I football teams to sort of know and to navigate with, right? If I went up to Kansas City, Denver, and I said, hey, what do you know about Coastal Carolina? How much information do you think I'm going to get on Coastal Carolina from people in Denver? I don't think you could get a lot of information on Coastal Carolina in South Carolina where they play.
I was going to ask you that. I don't even know what state it is.
And yet, they're the 15th ranked team in the country. They're the number 15 team. All right? So let's just say, for the sake of argument, that the top 25, I think there's like 148 Division I schools. All right, so it's like 1/6 of the college football Division I programs. In the NFL, you know, if you follow 32 teams, 1/6 is what, 5? So you know the top 5 teams in the league, right? You know a lot more about them than you do maybe a team like, I don't know, that's kind of middle of the pack. But a lot of people don't know about Coastal Carolina. A lot of people don't know about Wake Forest. A lot of people don't know about Kentucky, right? It's a hard sport to follow for everybody. So you use these polls as a guide. Right? Well, the people that kind of know, SIDs who vote for coaches and these AP writers, are saying Kentucky's really good at 6-0. I'll take their word for it. The committee is different, right? The committee is much different. They actually turn these polls away. They're supposed to know how good Cincinnati is at 5-0, even if they're ranked third. They go, I don't know if they're ranked third. I mean, is Oklahoma better? Is Alabama better? Like right now, think about this. Right now, both the Associated Press and the Coaches Bowl are telling you that based on their seasons so far, Alabama is worse than Cincinnati. Now, that doesn't mean that they think head-to-head Alabama and Cincinnati, Alabama would lose that game. They don't. It's not that. What they're saying is Cincinnati's season at 5-0 is better than Alabama's season at 5-1. That's how one loss to Texas A&M, a now-ranked football team, has done to the stock of Alabama. But it didn't plummet them that far. But I will tell you this. And this is just a hunch that I have for the committee. If the committee released their poll today, and it was the first one out of the gate, you know who'd be ahead of Cincinnati? Alabama. I think they'd have Alabama ahead of Cincinnati. And that's not to knock the Bearcats. Luke Fickell's done a fantastic job there, and they beat Notre Dame. That's legit. But I honestly think that they would, because that's how they're supposed to grade it. They're supposed to grade it a little differently. They're supposed to really analyze. Okay, Iowa, you're 6-0. Are you really the number two team in the country? Okay, here's some things for it. Here are some things against it. And that's why Alabama always benefits when they lose a game. We've seen Alabama lose before, right? We've seen them lose regular season games before. How do they continue to get in the playoff? They get into the playoff because their body of work is so good and their talent is so good that the committee, when they look at them, they go, you know what? If my goal here is to put four of the best teams in the college football playoff, and it doesn't matter the path, then we're doing that. And Alabama is on that list, even if they don't play in the SEC title game, right? That's the situation. I think that the more and more that we get games here. Obviously, teams are going to go away. Look at the Big 12 right now. I mean, my goodness. You've got Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Iowa, of course, on top of all of that. Michigan State. You know, there's just – that's five in the top 10 that I just mentioned. Are they going to have five in the top? No, right? Because they're going to be playing each other, and these 6-0 marks for Michigan State and these 6-0 marks for Michigan are going to be less than, right? Iowa at 6-0. Maybe they run the table, but maybe they don't. But there is going to be some attrition coming for all of these conferences, and then we'll really get it sorted out. And this is one of the reasons I'm glad that the committee, even though I like to see where they're going more than not, I'm glad they sort of wait to sort of shuffle these all out before they really start pegging these teams.
And you almost have to.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what we say about the rankings from the get-go of the season, it's really just to add something to the game.
Yeah, they market the game. When there's a little number, really it's like, oh, that's important. I better pay attention to that.
Yeah, when we get to week eight, and that's when the committee comes out with their first playoff rankings, they're like, all right, now you actually have some sort of idea.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think when if the committee rankings were to come out today, Alabama's ahead of Cincinnati.
Yeah, they are.
Sorry, guys.
They are. And I think they keep Cincinnati in the top five or six, but I don't think they put them. They're not three. I don't think the committee would put them as three.
No, I don't think so either.
And I'll tell you why. Because the committee knows, you know, they know who they are, right? They are the be-all, end-all of this process, right? And are they, when they look at the Bearcats and they go, okay, Cincinnati, like if they put their rankings out right now and they said, Cincinnati, you are 5-0 with a bullet, right? You beat a ranked Notre Dame team who was in the top 10 at the time, all right? And even though your schedule doesn't include any other ranked opponents, we like the way you look. We like what you're doing, right? Okay. But if we put you in the top four and you keep winning games, how do we get you out of that if we really don't feel like you're one of the top four teams when it's all said and done? Do we wait for the conference championship games and then finally go, yeah, well, there was nothing we could do. The one-loss Alabama team that you'd been ahead of all season is now ahead of you, right? That's what they're really worried about. Oh, and they've done this before. Remember the first year they did it, they had Baylor and TCU, and they were like, hey, you guys play around with these, you know, and the Big 12 thought they were getting two teams in. And then it was all said and done, they got zero teams in because they didn't play a conference championship.
Now, question for you.
Yeah.
Would the committee go as far as to say, Alabama, you know, we're going to rank you ahead of Cincinnati, but we're also going to rank you ahead of Oklahoma?
Good question. Really good question.
So that way we don't get a first-round matchup of two SEC teams.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think they will do that towards the end when they, you know, shuffle this out a little bit. It's not supposed to matter, but it kind of,
I know, I have a hard time believing that the committee would sit there and look at it and go, you know what, let's do Georgia, Alabama. They just played each other in the SEC final. The next game for them is going to be against each other again.
Yeah, I know. That would be really – it's one thing if it's the finals. That's fine because you earned your way to that point.
Yeah.
But to have it scheduled that way, that wouldn't be good.
Even if it's vice versa. I mean, I think if Georgia runs the table and loses to Alabama, they're still a top four team.
Wasn't that the – was I can't remember what case it was. I remember this. It was 1996. Florida lost to Florida State in Tallahassee, and then they matched them up in the Sugar Bowl. And everyone was like, Florida State was like, why do we have to beat this team again?
Yeah.
Like, we just did. And then Florida won that game convincingly and then won the national championship because of it. And Florida State fans were rather salty on that because it wasn't, you know, of course you don't want your rival to win a championship, but you don't want your rival to win a championship because they beat you. Right. And Florida State was like, there's no way we should have played them twice. When you play a team a second time, you get to fix all of the mistakes that went wrong the first time you lost to them. Right. That's why they say, you know, it's hard to beat a team three times. It's also hard to beat a team twice.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they look at it differently. You look at all the things you did right, trying to find some things you did wrong. But when you're looking through the things you did wrong, you're still looking at it through the lens of you won the game. Whereas the opponent is looking at everything that they did wrong through the lens of, we have to get better, and this is what we can do differently, right? And Spurrier went, I know how to beat this team now, and then did beat that team, and then they won the national title. But they were like, Florida State was like, why should we have done that? And that was in the old system where you kind of got invites and whatnot. this is the committee, and I agree with you. I think they would avoid completely a Georgia-Alabama rematch within a few weeks of a month or so after the SEC title game.
And, you know, and be perfectly fine. I mean, if it ends up being the final, hey, it's the final.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
We're fine with that, but we're not going to schedule it. You guys earned your spot there, earn to get there.
But I think this is going to be really interesting. Like, you know, we talked about top five, bottom five in the NFL. You know, we were like, oh, no, it's 5 weeks into the season, but look at all these good teams.
Yeah.
Right now, 7 weeks going into 7 weeks, we've got a lot of good teams. I mean, really, really a lot of good teams. But Georgia, man, oh, man, 5.5 points they're giving up. That's it. 5.5 points a game they are allowing.
That's ridiculous.
And Kentucky, also at 6-0, I think they're in for a long day.
Yeah, but we still don't just – we don't Kentucky's 6-0, I mean, but we don't give them any credit.
I'm not – yeah, I know. A lot of it is like my brother and I were talking about this because he went to Kentucky, and I'm like, dude, I'm not sold. I'm sorry. I'm not sold yet. Like I could be sold. I could be sold if you played a tight game with Georgia and still lost. Like, if you lose like Florida did to Alabama, I could go, all right, I see you. But I even though they beat Florida and LSU, and LSU's struggling a little bit, but they're still LSU. They still got great players and recruits. I don't know. I'm still not sold yet. I like Mark Stoops as a coach, though. I think he's heading for bigger and better things than being at a basketball school as a football coach. But he's still in the SEC, and that's great. All right, again, Brian Barrett's going to join us. We'll talk Red Sox as they get ready for the Astros and the ALCS. And this is sort of my mea culpa to Red Sox Nation, because I trashed you after beating the Yankees in the playoffs, thinking that you had no chance against Houston. But now you're 4 wins away from going to the World Series. I mean, I'm sorry, the Rays. Beating the Rays. All right, that'll be coming up as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
O'Reilly Auto Parts specializes in keeping your car on the road. Not sure how much life is left in your battery. O'Reilly Auto Parts can help. The professional parts people will test your battery for free. If it does need to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right one to fit your car. Superstar batteries are built to handle even the toughest conditions. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Again, Brian Barrett's going to join us, WEEI. We'll talk Red Sox as they get ready to take on the Astros in the ALCS. Again, it's weird to say this. The Red Sox are the surprising team in the postseason, right? Like Kiki Hernandez said, we are surprising everybody but ourselves. Because a lot of people didn't think they had a playoff team in all the analysis, but they're still the Red Sox. But this is still kind of a surprise. They're not David versus Goliath. I'm not going to go that far. Let's not go that crazy. But the Astros, I predicted the Astros would be in the postseason, and not surprised at all they're in the ALCS. Boston, I got to admit, I didn't think they'd get through the Rays. Heck, I didn't even think they'd get through the Yankees, but they did. They did both. And now they go up against one of the better teams in baseball in the Houston Astros. Real quick, did you see the J.R. Smith story?
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
Our boy.
All right, J.R. Smith, he's playing golf for North Carolina A&T.
Does he have a full ride? That's all I want to know. Does he have a scholarship?
Is he? I don't think so.
Probably not.
But this is funny. He's on the golf team because he actually has eligibility to be on the golf team. Former NBA star J.R. Smith. But he hit a ball in the woods in this tournament that they were in. And as he was going to his ball, he stepped on a hive of yellow jackets, and they kind of attacked him, if you will. And so the group that he was with got a 15-minute delay. They were allowed 15 minutes to sort of get, you know, delayed. So they let other golfers go through. And that kind of hurt his round, if you will. he finished with an 8-over-79. I think he was 27 over for the tournament, finishing 81st out of 84.
Is that good?
Yeah. Is that good?
I can't tell.
I don't know. You know what? Here's the thing, though. It's like what they say. What do you call the person who finishes last in medical school? Doctor?
Yeah.
If you finish last at a college golf tournament, you're still a college golfer, though. That's still pretty decent. Still a pretty good accomplishment.
Remember Happy Gilmore? He's like, well, I still get a check.
Right.
So either way, you know, I'm coming out with money. It's like, yeah. He's like, what does the winner get? About $100,000. What does the loser get? About $3,000. I'm still coming out with some money.
I was East Tennessee State is a really good golf program, and a friend of mine has a friend who is on the team and whatnot. So he posts on Facebook, right? And I just was like, oh, that's cool. You know, your friend's kid is playing on the men's golf team. Then I looked at the scores, and these guys are shooting like 65 in college golf. It's like, I'm looking at this going, this is PGA Tour scoring. Like, oh my God. Like the leader finished a 3-day tournament at 18 under par or something crazy like that. I'm like, that's PGA Tour good.
Now I might be naive, but our college kids, are they shooting from the black tees?
It depends on where they go. I mean, they're not playing, you know, hard PGA Tour level courses.
Yeah.
Usually they're getting a good, decent course in an area. And like, yeah, this is where we're playing.
You know, I mean, is that like the graduation part of it? It's like, college, you shot from the blue tees. And then when you're on the PGA Tour, you have to shoot from the black tees.
Yeah, I wonder that if like guys who are like Victor Hovland, who played at Oklahoma State, like when he gets to the PGA Tour, does he go, oh my God, a 482-yard, like a 502-yard par four? Oh, we never had that in college.
So
or do
further.
They play legit, you know, distances? But that's, you know, so being a college golfer, even if you're 27 over after your number of rounds, I think it was played three rounds. So he averaged 9 over par for 3 rounds of college golf. Now, that ain't good. But still, there were 3 golfers worse than him at this tournament.
Are they all on his team, too?
Yeah, I wonder.
I have to imagine, is that how he made the team? I'm certain he made the team because, like, it's J.R. Smith. You know, we get some publicity out of this.
I got to think if you're a coach of those 3 players that finished behind J.R. Smith, you're like, he got stung by a bee or a yellow jacket. You better have been swallowed by a land shark in order to accept this result. Are you kidding me?
The man can't even keep time.
No. Oh, my God. This is the funny thing about J.R. Smith, though. He said afterwards he gets texts from NBA players that are following his golf career, like Steph Curry and those guys.
Why not?
They were all giving him hell for this. And he's like, I know they're watching. So it's not like he went to North Carolina A&T and was like disappearing on their golf program. This guy's making national news every time.
And I love how he still tweets out, like, you know, he passed his liberal studies midterm or something like that. He got like a B on it or an A on it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's giving us his college breakdown. I mean, this is a guy who's definitely awesome. Excited to be there.
He is.
Which is fantastic.
By the way, the video of him swatting all these yellow jackets, I love the idea that somebody went, taking out the cell phone, man. I'm watching this guy. Throwing his arms in the air, jumping up and down, got hornets all over him, getting stung. Yeah, that must have been awful.
I got stung the other day.
That's my biggest
worry,
man.
About a month ago,
did
I got stung by a wasp.
I never know. Forever. I do a lot of yard work. I'm always afraid of running into some nest where I'm like, oh, my God, this is terrible.
Yeah,
like they just come attacking you.
And like in the corner of, you know, where the garage is, where the garage door comes down, or the garage door is closed, right in the corner, there was a little wasp nest. And so I went and I was like, you know, I got to get rid of that thing because right below that's a keypad to open the, you know, manual or open up the garage door.
Right.
And so I took one of my son's old baseball bats and I went and swung at the hornet nest because it was small. There wasn't that many. It was like two or three hornets on there or wasps. And I missed it. I hit the garage, made a loud sound. Those two guys came right after me.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they just set their sights and came right down. I started swinging at them. And one of them got to my arm and stung me.
Oh, my gosh.
So then I went to Lowe's, grabbed some wasp spray. And I said, yeah, I'm going. I just went to the guy. I said, give me the good stuff. And he's like, you want this? I said, no, I want murdering.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, when those wasps come out, they look at you like, I'm going to mess you up now.
Just, and I mean, it was like they had like red eyes.
Yeah,
like
we're not messing around.
Cartoons get those red eyes and just beady eyes at you.
You disturbed my sleep, messing you up right now. Yeah, they're dangerous, man. Well, J.R. Smith, well done surviving the hornet stings to shoot 27 over in 3 rounds of golf in the tournament.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, it's October baseball in Boston again. Red Sox advancing to the ALCS, where they'll take on the Houston Astros. And I had to apologize because I did not see them getting it all past the Tampa Bay Rays in this series, but they did, and they did it in four games. Progressive guest line, Progressive making it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Our good friend Brian Barrett, WEEI in Boston. How are you, my friend?
Tony, I'm doing well, man. First, the Red Sox beat the Yankees, and then the Rays are eating popcorn in the dugout after they had a big lead in game two, so I'm feeling good.
No doubt. I got two conflicting things here. One, people didn't predict the Red Sox would have this kind of season, but at the same time, they're still the Red Sox. When we look at how surprising this is, how surprising is it really?
So if you look at the Vegas over-under win total, they were at, 79 games. So nobody expected them to be at this point. So I guess in some sense it's surprising. But Alex Cora was basically saying since the beginning of spring training that they had a really good team. The question was going to be, were they going to get enough pitching? And at times this season, they really didn't, and it looked ugly. I mean, think about where this team was at just about 2 weeks ago. It felt like they had a real chance not even to make the wild card game. They go into the final week or the final 2 weeks of the season. They get swept by the Yankees at home. They lose two of three to the Orioles, one of the worst teams in baseball history. And then somehow they go into Washington, they sweep there. And it did feel like, Tony, at the end of the season, to your point about the expectations, since the expectations weren't high coming into the season, the Red Sox had this attitude, the us versus the world mentality. And then they hit some rough patches, and towards the end of the season, when their postseason hopes were in jeopardy, it felt like they really, really pressed. And they did not look like the same team down the stretch. And it feels like once they got into that wild card game against the Yankees, they look like the team that we saw for the majority of the season, especially offensively. They're hitting the crap out of the ball right now. It just feels like they're a lot looser than they were as recently as 2 weeks ago. So, and I do feel like this team thrives when they're getting doubted, right? Like they were home dogs against the Yankees. They were, of course, dogs against the 100-win Rays. I feel like this is a better position for them to be in right now when they're underdogs, because they were never supposed to be the favorite. And quite frankly, I don't think they handled that well.
This series against the Rays, it's not only winning in four, but they won the last three. What was the key to beat a team that had 100 wins? And people were looking at saying, yeah, this might be the best put-together team in the American League.
Yeah, there's three things. The first one is, we said going into the series, if they were going to win, their offense was going to have to show up. Well, they had 51 hits. As a team, they had a 919 OPS. They hit 328, and they had a guy, Kike Hernandez, had seven straight plate appearances with a hit. So the lineup now is the best it's been all season long. Now, it's not as good in the field, and they've never been a good defensive team, but with Schwarber in the leadoff spot, think about this. J.D. Martinez is hitting six. J.D. Martinez, one of the best sluggers that we've seen over the past 5 years. Now, he hasn't been as good this year, but he's hitting six in this lineup. So that's the first thing. They absolutely lit up the Rays pitching. They destroyed all three of their rookie pitchers, including McClanahan, who they didn't get to in game one. They lit him up when he came out of the bullpen the other night. The second thing is they've got unbelievable pitching performances out of the bullpen. It was Tanner Houck who essentially saved the season in game two when Chris Sale got absolutely destroyed. Five runs in the first inning. Houck comes up. He gives you five innings. He gives up just the one run. So he was tremendous to save that season and give the Red Sox the opportunity to get the offense going. Then on Sunday, the marathon game, Pivetta, who was supposed to start game four, he comes out of the bullpen. You go four innings, you have seven strikeouts, and you get this weird ruling that definitely worked in the Red Sox favor when the ball went off in a run throw into the dugout. So they benefit from that weird rule. It was the right rule, but it was it's a weird rule, but it's the right rule. And then the last thing is Cora. I mean, he just absolutely outmanaged Kevin Cash. There's no way about it. Now, I'll tell you this. The other night, Tony, just to give you one example. So Tanner Houck's on fumes. He throws 61 pitches on Friday night. So they bring him back out in that game, the closeout game. He doesn't have it. He gives up a home run to Wander Franco. So they bring him back out for the seventh inning because Cora knows that Kevin Cash can't help himself but going to his bench. So he pinch hits a lefty Choi. So right after he does that, Cora goes to his bullpen. He gets this lefty Josh Taylor, which is exactly what Cora wanted Cash to do. He set him up. He got two lefties that inning. and a righty in Yandy Diaz who had no power. So Cora set so many traps for Kevin Cash, and he took the bait every time. So those are the three things. The offense got going. Unbelievable performances out of the bullpen, mainly Houck and Pivetta and Whitlock, who was nails the other day to close that thing out. And then, of course, the advantage of having Alex Cora in that dugout.
It's like a chess master where he goes, here, take this bishop, because in three moves, I'm going to get your queen.
Yeah, that's what he does. I mean, he did it to him in the other game as well. He gets their lefties out of the lineup, so he makes more advantageous matchups later on in the game for his righties that come out of the bullpen, because he has way more faith in his righties. The Houck's, now Pivetta's been in the bullpen a lot, and the Garrett Whitlocks of the world. So he basically was daring Kevin Cash to get his lefties out of the game to make it better matchups later on. And every time it worked, Kevin Cash, and not to mention Cash, I felt he had a bad series. He brings McClanahan in to the third inning the other day in a scoreless game, who is their ace, but he's on 3 days rest. I don't understand. If you're going to bring that guy into the third inning of the game, why wouldn't you just start him? He hasn't pitched out of the bullpen all season long. It made no sense to me whatsoever. And the Sox were all over him. I mean, that's the reason the Rays lost the game. They gave up five runs in that third inning. Devers hit a home run, Verdugo double, and JD and RBI single off the wall. I mean, Kevin Cash really lost the series for his team in a lot of ways.
In an area that has so much success with all of its team winning championships or at least competing in championships, again, this was a Red Sox team that didn't have a lot of expectation. And I'm not, you know, I don't want to use the term house money. That seems a little overblown. But how is the fan reaction to this team, given this, what people thought about where this team was going to be at the beginning of the season?
Yeah, it's a really weird dynamic because at the trading deadline, really, everybody went after Chaim Bloom saying that he didn't do enough, right? So essentially, there was like, oh, well, does he really believe in the team? People are upset about that because they were surprised, and at the deadline, they went first in the division. They go out, they get Schwarber, which was a great move to begin with. People are mad because he was hurt, but he was the best bat moved at the deadline. There's no even question about that right now. His numbers would indicate that, but they didn't get like reliever than anybody do. And then all of a sudden, like, I was upset about the fact they didn't get a premier reliever either, because that's exactly what they needed. This guy, Hansel Robles, who was horrible with the Twins, they get him. And until the game, game three of the series the other night on Sunday, he hadn't given up an earned run since August the 29th. So he had kind of turned it around. But the fan base was really down the stretch of the season doubting this team. They were upset with Bloom. And now it does feel like they've won a lot of those people back. But people are really mad. So you got to remember, like, the second half of the season, they weren't that good.
Yeah.
They played, like, 500 baseball, and then they had that COVID situation, and that was a whole other thing with all the, like, the Red Sox are one of the teams that didn't hit that 85% threshold. So you had people in the local media blame, not myself, but people blaming the Red Sox for not being vaccinated. This is why their season's falling apart, because they didn't fit the 85% threshold, even though they ignored the fact this whole thing started with a guy that was vaccinated. He had a breakthrough case, and that kind of spread throughout the clubhouse. But yeah, there was a lot of negativity towards the Red Sox for the majority of the season, and now it does feel like there's always been like the loyal group of fans, but it does feel like now they've won over the fan base in general.
All right, let's look ahead to this ALCS and the Astros. And is there a situation that the Astros have, whether it's the way their rotation is set up or the way their lineup is? I mean, they're a very good team, obviously, but that could be a problem for Boston?
Yeah, just the lineup in general. I mean, I think the one thing the Red Sox do benefit from, if you're going to beat that team that's an absolute wagon, you got to catch some breaks. I think they caught a break with the rainout the other day, where now they start Lance McCullers yesterday.
Yeah, right.
Which means he's not going to start game one, obviously, and that's the ace of their staff. He's been tremendous. So I think they catch a break in some sense, and they get to reset their pitching. So Nathan Eovaldi has been so good for the Red Sox. He gets to pitch game one. But I think it's just the fact that you got to deal with Correa and Altuve and Bregman. And the Red Sox got their ass kicked by the Astros this season. I mean, they owned them. Now, granted, the Red Sox are a different team since then. They didn't have Kyle Schwarber for that particular series, which is obviously a major difference maker, but it's the fact that those guys have been in so many big games. They're not going to be in a situation where the Red Sox are the best offense in baseball when they play at Fenway Park. The numbers would indicate that. So they're not going to be intimidated from going to Fenway Park. So it's just the fact that that lineup is so devastating. The other thing I would say is this, it's going to be a weird situation for the next couple of days between the core thing with the Astros. Like, that whole situation is now going to come back up again. I mean, Cora has talked about this all season long. He's had to answer all the questions about it. And now it's going to come up again. And it's going to come up again for the Astros, too, because
sure,
Cora's on the other side. I just can't wait until we get to Friday and we can get to a baseball game, because the next 48 hours are going to be all about that.
Absolutely, without question. Brian, great having you on as always. Glad to see that your success. Really appreciate it. Hope to get you on again soon. Maybe a World Series preview as well.
Oh, that would be nice, man.
Yeah, I don't want to get too ahead of myself because I already owe an apology for bashing this team heading into the postseason.
Hey, don't worry about it. We got a lot of hosts on the station that do the same thing.
Brian, great talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much as always.
All right, Tony.
You got it, Brian Barrett. Yeah, goodness gracious. I mean, look, I know that area. I know this. Boston is crazy. It's a great, great city. And I was very blessed to go to a lot of Red Sox games growing up as a kid. I was very blessed for that. I knew a lot of my friends never went, and I went like twice a year. Right. To see the transformation of this franchise from a frustrating, when are we going to get ours, to a team that's in the ALCS when they, no one thought they belonged there. Like, name a Yankee team that has ever gone to an American League Championship Series where people went, wow, I never thought I'd see this. Like, never, never. The Yankees get to the American League Championship Series, you go, yeah, well, look at their payroll. Look at the people they have on their team. Look what they built. There's never a surprise. There's never like, oh, my God, Vegas thought we'd win 65 games and we're in the World Series. This Red Sox team, think about their success. Think about just the last 20 years of their World Series success. And now they're back in an American League Championship Series when people thought they wouldn't make the playoffs. Because they were, as he mentioned, they weren't playing that good in the second half. Yeah, he's right. This whole Alex Cora sign-stealing Astros Red Sox combination thing and Cora being in the middle of it, he's right. That's dominating the next 48 hours. He's 100% right about this. And then we'll get to game one. But he also said something really interesting, too. And this is one of the keys with baseball. Because, again, that old saying, momentum's only good as your next day's starter. The fact that Lance McCullers got to go in game four, he's right. They don't see him in game one, right? And Nate Eovaldi, they get to use him in game one. So there might be an advantage here. Now, it's a long series, seven games. Things have a tendency to sort of even out a little bit rather than a quick five-game series. Those two extra games do allow more of a buffer. But I'm really fascinated with the matchups in this, especially Rafael Devers going up against Houston pitching, because they used to pepper him with fastballs to see if he could get it. All right, we'll come back. We'll wrap up the hour, set you up for Denton Day coming up next on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks to Brian Barrett, WEEI, for joining us to talk Red Sox baseball. Boy, his description of what Alex Cora did to Kevin Cash was great. Just the intricacies of that, right? What managers will do. And we know Kevin Cash is totally susceptible to that stuff. Does it all the time. So how much is the city in Houston ready for this, for the Astros to reclaim their throne of World Series champions from a couple years ago?
You know what's funny? I kind of had this feeling like this is old hat now.
Yeah, that's all, you know it. That's exactly right.
You know,
get a little greedy.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, no big deal.
Yep.
Right now, it's not a big deal. I mean, it's, of course, we're in the AL.
Wake me up when the World Series starts, that kind of thing.
I had this feeling like people are walking around right now just going, yeah, of course we're in the ALCS. Where'd you expect us to be?
Yeah, it's, again, you're right. I mean, at the beginning of the season, I probably would have said, yeah, Houston, why not? You know? So, I don't know. It's this Red Sox team, though, man, I don't like when teams say, nobody believes in us but us, right? I think it's so cliched, and sometimes you just roll your eyes and go, come on.
Yeah.
Cut it out.
But.
When a team goes, we shocked the world. Yeah, no, people in Albania don't really, they're not waking up today going, oh, my God, can't believe that happened. But in this case, you can honestly say that. Like, you really can. He's right. That team was not playing very good baseball. And now you get a second chance. Like, and here's the thing, the second, like, people go, well, you get to the postseason, you get a little breathing room, you get a reset button. The Red Sox didn't really get a reset button until they played the Rays. And even then they lost the first game.
Yeah.
right? So the Yankees is we're an underdog, even at Fenway Park, we're an underdog to a team that just swept us not that long ago in a one-game winner-take-all, winner advances, loser goes home game. So you're not really taking a breather there. Then you get into this series with Tampa Bay down in St. Petersburg. You lose game one 5-0. And then you go, oh, my God, now we got to beat. That's why I said the Red Sox have no chance. They're not beating this team 3 out of the next 4 games. Oh, I didn't realize they needed 3 games to win 3 games to advance to the to the ALCS. Goodness gracious.
I mean, it's...
You know,
I just love the fact, like, how, you know, what Brian said, too, painted the pictures like this was a team that got swept by the Yankees, lost 2 of 3 to Orioles, the worst team in history. Yeah. Like, we were looking at it like the Red Sox are playing their way out of it. Come on in, Mariners. Mariners, okay. The seat's warm. Blue Jays, you want to play?
Sure.
Red Sox don't. So come on in.
Right. Exactly. And then they not only did they take advantage of the best opportunity you could give a team is go ahead. Here you go.
Let's be fair. I mean, you know, no one really gave them a chance to beat the Yankees in a one-game take-all.
Well, I didn't because I thought the momentum was on the Yankee side, right?
Yeah.
Because they had swept the Red Sox in that weekend series.
Obviously, there was no chance they were going to beat the Rays.
Well, good luck to the Red Sox.
So, probably now, I mean, what? No chance to beat the Astros, right?
Should be a good series. All right, Denton Day's coming up next. We'll be back tomorrow with a Throwback Thursday and a fun one at that. We should have a good time on tomorrow. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Thanks for joining me.